All right, welcome back to another episode of Locked On Jaguars, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Zach Goodall. You can throw me a follow on Twitter at @Zach_Goodall, as well as my co-host, Chris Thornton, who you can find at Misto Christopho. Chris, say what's up to the people.
The Will Greer film session has begun.
How's that going?
You know, it's going. I'll hold my cards close to my chest until the article drops, but
all right, it's going. You'll hold your cards close to your chest, but in as basic a summary as you can give us without spilling the beans, like, what are your thoughts? Like, are you impressed?
Encouraged. Like it? Yeah, it's encouraging. Watching West Virginia versus Texas right now, so I know he makes some big throws, but just watching start to finish, how he's delivering the ball, how he's doing. Obviously, there's some mistakes that everybody knows about Will Greer, but he's looking better. But I think really I'm going to be seeing, well, after watching all this, is if he gets that invite to the Senior Bowl. I think that'll be something that I'll really be watching, if he gets that invite to Mobile and how he performs there.
And that's something that we will be attending live in Mobile, Alabama. Chris and I will be taking Locked On Jaguars on the road. Chris gets to show off his shiny mobile podcasting unit.
The MPU.
We'll be in Mobile when the Senior Bowl does come around. So that's obviously content that is a little bit away, but something you're going to want to keep your eyes out for coming from Locked On Jaguars. And to be sure you stay in the loop when that happens, as well as during the rest of the season and so on and so forth, make sure to throw us a subscription over on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Megaphone, just about anywhere you can listen to podcasts. You can listen to Locked On Jaguars and bookmark our site as well at lockedonjaguars.com. Keep leaving us those ratings and reviews, especially on iTunes. We love it. We love to hear the feedback, positive or negative. Let us know what we can do to make this your favorite show about the Jaguars, if it isn't already. Now, we're going to break down a little bit more of the Steelers game as more information has become available, and then we will put this game in the rearview mirror after tonight's episode, tonight slash Tuesday morning, whenever you're listening to this. We recorded it on Monday night. PFF stats have become available for the game, giving us a little bit more of an in-depth breakdown as to what did work and what wasn't really there for the Jaguars. And also, the coaches film came available, and I did a little bit of diving into that. I'm going to probably do more tomorrow, but I got enough to really understand exactly what the issues were. I did look for some positives that weren't necessarily obvious, and by that I mean the run game obviously worked yesterday. I don't really need to dive into much film on that, because normally when Fournette's healthy and stuff like that, the run game works, and what do you know, it worked really well yesterday with him, Hyde, and Yeldon. But I did find one positive that really stuck out, and Chris, I want your opinion on this. The Jaguars did not start Malik Jackson yesterday. They came out and said it was some form of personnel move with what they were trying to match against Pittsburgh. Malik Jackson did not seem very enthused by it. He said in a comment this morning, you know, ask the starters. And he just sounded a little petty about it. I can't blame him. The dude's an all-star. I wouldn't want to start the game not on the field if I were him or a player of his caliber. But one guy that did play a little bit of three tech in his place throughout the game, not a ton, but he got 21 total snaps during the game, was Taven Bryan, the rookie first-round pick out of Florida, who the Jaguars have been trying to, you know, square a peg into a round hole at defensive end. And he got some defensive end snaps, and what do you know? You saw him get kind of pushed around. He couldn't try and find his way into getting inside to win pressures. He got just pushed outside when he was pass rushing from the end position. When he was playing on the interior, he had two quarterback pressures, and that was something that you can learn from PFF. Chris will talk about later. He also had a hit. But I actually saw him play really well against the run. He was eliminating the backside. There was a play where James Conner was supposed to go through either the one or the three hole, but nothing opened up. He was going to have to try and bounce somewhere. It could have been left. It could have been right. Yannick Ngakoue was coming across his face from the right side, so he did want to look left, and Taven Bryan ate it up. He didn't make the tackle, but he totally eliminated the backside. He bulldozed through Alejandro Villanueva. Keep in mind, that dude is a 6'9", nice, 320-pound left tackle who's a former Marine, I'm pretty sure, or maybe Army, something like that. But dude's a tough dude, and he's a big, big dude. And Taven Bryan looked pretty polished in run defense coming from the three-technique position. It's almost as if he should be playing at the position he literally, the only position he ever played in college. Don't you agree, Chris?
I do agree of playing players at their natural position. That is something I have advocated. Just like AJ Cann should have never been a right guard in his time in Jacksonville.
Yes, I do completely agree with that. And yeah, I mean, Brian is more of a natural three tech. That's just, that's what he said he is. He told me that at his pro day back in March. And the Jaguars were trying to say that they're comfortable with how he's come along. But when you watch the film week after week and see him getting eaten up when he's playing outside, it's just not good. When he's playing on the interior, which they don't really do often, but they did it this past weekend, you finally started to see a little bit of production out of him on film and in the box score. So maybe Chris is right. Maybe it's smart to play players where they're good.
Yeah, I mean, who would have thought that if you're drafting guys in the first round or stuff like that, that you would want to play them at positions that they already know and or are just natural fits. But again, that just kind of shows you how this coaching staff really is in the, I don't know, I'm just trying to think of words right now, but that's basically it basically sums up the entire coaching staff at this point.
Speaking of natural fits in coaching staff, we're ready to get onto the negatives. There were a lot more of those. Natural fits being the lack thereof from Blake Bortles at the quarterback position. Coaching staff being about Nathaniel Hackett at offensive coordinator. And now a lot of people were saying he called a really bad game. I don't think that's true. There were a lot of film situations where Pittsburgh was playing well and there wasn't anything play calling could have done because they at the end of the game started to take away the run game and dared Bortles to start throwing the ball, and they knew that that wasn't going to work very well. So at the end of the day, Hackett truly did seem handicapped. The only time I saw them try and get aggressive when throwing the ball was when Hackett, I do think, was making a mistake, because it was at the end of the first half. They were trying, and I talked about this on yesterday's episode, that three play drive where they tried to take a couple of shots, and you go back and watch the film on the first play. They're facing a cover three. The free safety is stupid deep. The corners are a solid 8 yards off the ball, and the linebackers are looking like they want to blitz and are getting a little low. The middle of the field opens up wide for the backside receiver to come across on a crosser, which is what the Jaguars literally love to do. And Bortles just does not see the ability to check Moncrief into a crosser. He would have had so much room for yards after the catch, but Bortles just doesn't have that processing ability. On that first down play, you may want to see a run because the run was working so well. I understood the idea of trying to take shots to start the that drive to try and get an extra touchdown on the board before halftime. And on that one, you blame Bortles for messing up a really easy pre-snap read that he could have made. Second play, Bortles once again becomes responsible. There, he tried to take a deep shot across the middle of the field on a skinny post. They were going against cover three once again. They ran a crosser from the backside receiver. That cornerback bailed to the deep middle of the field, and Bortles stared the corner down as he was dropping back into coverage. And Bortles decides, you know what? I'm just going to throw into what's going to be double coverage anyway to Dede Westbrook. He's lucky he really overthrew him, because that would have been picked. Bortles had an escape route. He had a quick little crosser coming across the middle once again that would have put them in field goal range. He could have run the ball, could have put them in field goal range, neither of which happened. Third play was, I want to call it a split. Hackett should have called a run play. 50 seconds left. Steelers don't have any timeouts. They could have run the ball, at the very least ran the time down to like 10 seconds and punted, or probably gotten into field goal range. They were only about 5 yards removed. And the Steelers were anticipating that maybe they were going to try and throw it one more time. Instead, they call a passing play, but Bortles, once again, doesn't have the mental processing whatsoever to see what's in front of him. And he actually has an open check down really early on to DJ Chark. He's got about 10 yards of separation on a little dump off to the outside. He could have easily gotten them into field goal range. Instead, Blake holds onto the ball, looks around, doesn't do anything right, runs out to the side, decides that he wants to throw it out of bounds last second with 50 seconds left on the clock. Pittsburgh is the type of team that'll normally take advantage of that. The Jaguars are lucky they did not and did not score before halftime. Bortles could have run the ball or checked down and gotten them into field goal range, but it was like a three-play series where, yes, there was a little bit on Hackett, but as Chris said last night, 80-20, Bortles was mainly at fault on that drive.
And just listen to you say the mental processing part is something that's kind of going to Will Grier real quick is pretty encouraging, because I can say that that man goes through his reads very quickly and can put that money on a dot. So Jags fans, be encouraged when that report comes out. But yeah, the 80-20, honestly the last few days watching these plays more and more, seeing them pop up, it might be 90-10 at this point,
right,
for the Jags, or for the game between Nathaniel Hackett and Blake Bortles. Just so it looked bad in person in live time, but then going back and just kind of looking at the all 22 and stuff like that, it's just a next level of yikes.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And if you guys want to see that Will Grier breakdown, be sure to check out LockedOnJaguars.com, because Chris has got you guys on what, like Friday or something like that.
Friday.
But, yeah, but anyway, sticking on the mental processing note, there was one more play I really wanted to break down from Bortles, and it was the one I talked about, that missed read. I said DJ Chark before, I was caught up in the moment. It was actually Moncrief, but regardless, this was the play that sealed the game. And I know that there was obviously very bad mental processing on where the play where Bortles did not keep the read option and run himself on 3rd and 5 with about 2 minutes left. And in return, Pittsburgh drove the field and scored. And Marone came out and said today it was a read option, that Blake could have done that. There shouldn't have ever been in that position in the first place for Bortles to once again make a really dumb mistake and not mentally process what was going on. Instead, what he could have done is when he was staring Dante Moncrief in the face in a deep cover three, his corner playing off, he's got about 4 yards of separation on a deep slant. Middle of the field is completely his. He's got all the room in the world to score. Dante Moncrief might not be fast when he's breaking routes, but he does have straight line speed. You lead him on a ball and he catches it, he might go to the house on that play. Or at the very worst, he extends that drive. You get a bunch more time off the clock for Pittsburgh to not take advantage of. You at the bare minimum get 3 points. Bortles stares him in the eye as he's breaking on that route. Cornerback is so far removed. And Bortles just decides, nah. He looks away after staring a wide open receiver down, tries to run outside, wants to run outside a little bit, doesn't end up getting it done, gets sacked for 10 yards. And by the way, when he was staring at Moncrief, he had the cleanest pocket I had seen all day. And it was on play action, so there was a lot of time already taken away. Right on the top of Moncrief's route, totally clean pocket. No excuses to defend Bortles whatsoever. That play sealed the game. And I knew that it would be bad. I didn't realize in all 22 just how bad it would be until I watched that today. I truly think even though that read option was clearly there and Bortles should have kept it and sealed the game at that point, he never needed to be in that position to mess up in the first place, because he brought it upon himself.
That's fair. That's a very sad statement, to say the least, that there probably were many opportunities. And like I said, all you have to do really is just get 10, 15 yards towards the end of the drive towards the end of the game anyway to seal it out. But nonetheless, here we are at 3-7.
Yeah, no, I mean, here we are. Exactly. Here we are. Here we are going into our first break after a little bit of film breakdowns, giving people a true eye as to who really was to blame yesterday for the loss. When we come back, we're going to be getting a little numerical with PFF grades. A lot more up Chris's alley. He's had these numbers studied while I've had the film studied. And you could literally put us together into one big football mega nerd. We'll be bringing that side out when we return from these commercials.
You know, ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice. Usually, it's what team to bet on this week. The truth is, I don't know who's going to win. But if you think you know, you got to check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, guys, they're your best bet this season. They've been in the business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game, live betting, over-unders on fantasy points scored, and the most rewarding player perks in the business. MyBookie is slammed with new bettors and wants to give everyone the best service possible. If you're willing to deposit after 7 p.m. Eastern Time, they'll give you an additional $25 free play on deposits over $100. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use promo code LOCKEDON25 to activate this offer. Visit MyBookie today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON25 when creating your account to claim up to $1,000 in free play. If you're willing to hold out until 7 p.m., you get an extra $25 free play by using promo code LOCKEDON and add 25 at the end of it. If it's up to you guys, but I'd wait until after dinner to take extra money. You play, you win, you get paid.
So Chris has the PFF numbers pulled up. I do too, but Chris is the guy who's really good with giving him that credit. And Chris has found a couple of different observations throughout. I noticed one about the offensive line. A lot of people were saying the offensive line had a really, really, really bad game. They didn't have a good game in pass protection. It was far from their worst. Bortles brought upon two, at least, of his own sacks. When you go back and look at the film, you could argue himself maybe into three. The one on the missed read to Moncrief was the absolute worst of them all, and it was completely on him. But all in all, Chris, the offensive line did allow a decent amount of pressure. The devil's advocate says they've had a couple of weeks in the past, recent weeks especially, where they've allowed a lot more.
Yeah, the offensive line let up 16 pressures total on the day, which is kind of middle for what they've let the last few weeks. They've let up a lot. They let up a little bit less, but 16 seems to be kind of a median number. But the backups, the guys that had to come in and replace the injured offensive linemen, AJ Cann went down early in the game yesterday, was replaced by Chris Reed, who ended up being the worst graded offensive lineman. Maybe not graded, I'll take that back, but he did let up the most amount of sacks on the day, which is what kind of really matters. And although Zach was saying earlier off air that Blake Bortles is pretty much to blame for most of these sacks because he kind of just holds onto the ball and gets hit and whatnot, can't read a defense. Unfortunately, somebody has to be credited with the sacks, and it can't be the quarterback. So Chris Reed was credited with letting up three sacks on the day. And Tyler Shatley, Brandon Linder's replacement at center, let up the most pressures on the day with five and let up two sacks. But I think the most kind of heartbreaking thing is Tyler Shatley's pass blocking grade on the day was probably the lowest that I have ever seen for a Jaguars player, or maybe any player that I've seen looking at PFF with somebody who started a football game. And he had a 6.8 pass block rating, by far the lowest I've ever seen. Chris Reed was right behind him with a 27.2, but 6.8 is probably the darkest that the PFF scale really gets for the red, because that is really dark.
Yeah, and I agree that there was definitely some mistakes in pass protection. I completely agree with that. I still am willing to put more of the blame on Bortles at the end of the day. And like Chris said, it was the guys that came in and played replacement ball weren't doing the best. Last week against the Colts, they played a lot better in pass protection. They only allowed 10 pressures. Against the Eagles in week 8, the Jaguars allowed a whopping 24 pressures. In week 7 against the Houston Texans, they allowed 22 pressures. I'm pulling these up as I go, so sorry if this stalls whatsoever. Week 6, they had a better one of their better games, only allowing 15 against the Cowboys. One that you will shock you guys is the Kansas City Chiefs do not have much of a pass rush. Yet they had one against Jacksonville. 28 pressures during that game. I mean, those are just over the past, what, I think I counted now 5 or 6 games in total. So while there wasn't anything to really hang your hat on from pass protection yesterday, you really can't say that this was their worst game whatsoever, when you can realistically say it probably was Bortles' worst game, right? So I'm just trying to knock out the bias towards defending Bortles, and it's not that I'm trying to be biased in saying that like Bortles is the worst quarterback of all time, because I'm going to get that. I get that every week in my mentions, that I'm just a Bortles hater and that I'm subjective because I have something personal against him. No, I'm just sick of the vouching for someone that's truly holding the team back. Like, there's a clear blindness there in saying that it was all the pass rushes, the pass protection's fault, when Bortles got himself into a lot of those situations, and it was far from the worst that the pass protection's done. But anything to, you know, just pretty much say he's the scapegoat.
Ayo.
Chris, what are some other numbers that you've got for us? Make me feel a little better about myself. Well,
this isn't going to make you feel better by any means. Remember that tweet that came out today about which quarterback would do worse when you don't pressure them?
Yeah, I think maybe.
It was, I believe, Big Cat Country tweeted it out, and the resounding answers were Blake Bortles or Nathan Peterman. Because, I mean, why the heck not? But anyway, I only bring that up because, statistically speaking, Blake Bortles... Oh, here's the tweet. Okay, it's from Benjamin Albright. He said, "Can someone name me a quarterback that you beat by not pressuring them?" So, obviously, Blake Bortles was a very popular answer. So, looking at the passing charts for Blake Bortles, Blake Bortles' passing stats are worse when he's not under pressure than when he is under pressure, at least for the Steelers game that held up. He was considerably better when he was blitzed than when he was not blitzed. He had 13 passing yards when he was not blitzed, and he had 91 passing yards when he was blitzed. And that was only on two more dropbacks. So it's not like the numbers were greatly skewed. He averaged 1.9 yards per attempt on 7 attempts when not blitzed, and then averaged 8.3 yards per attempt on 11 attempts when he was blitzed. And the same goes for under pressure and not under pressure. The numbers are a little bit closer. 6 for 11 for 42 yards when he was not under pressure, and 4 for 7 for 62 yards. But that's a 3.8 yard per attempt to an 8.9 yard per attempt. So Blake was... Yeah, statistically, he was better when he was blitzed than when he was left with a clean pocket or not pressured.
Can we just go ahead and kill the episode now? Because I am dead inside. Give me some positive news, man, please. Please.
The run game looked like it was back for the most part. The Jags eclipsed 100 yards rushing on the day. 179 yards, so they almost hit that 200 mark, really. Leonard Fournette looked good in the first half. Obviously, second half play calling and offensive line shutting down and whatnot kind of led to the downfall of what was a pretty strong day. But the run game looked good. Carlos Hyde looked good, although he only had 8 rushing attempts, finished with 44 yards, so a solid 5.5 yards per attempt on the ground, which was encouraging because the run game had really just not been there the last few weeks. It was TJ Yeldon really on dump passes for the most part. So that's one of the biggest things. Josh Lambeau had himself another perfect day, was 2 for 2 on field goals, 3 for 3 on field goals, 1 for 1 on extra points. Another kind of underrated note, going back to the Steelers game, why didn't the Jags go for 2 after their touchdown? That makes it a field goal game towards the end. Obviously, it doesn't matter because the Steelers score with like 10 seconds left. But nonetheless, that's irrelevant. But what are some other things that you want to know? I do have some encouraging news for you.
Please just hit me with it before I die, man.
And it rhymes with Malik Jackson.
Jaleek Maxson?
Yes. Malik Jackson, it came out and it was kind of known that Malik Jackson did not start this game against the Steelers. When asked for an interview in the locker room in the post game, he told reporters, "Why don't you ask somebody who started?" So obviously Malik Jackson was not happy. However, something that he can kind of pin his hat on is, although not starting, Malik Jackson led the Jaguars defense in quarterback pressures on the day with 6 total pressures on just 32 pass rushing snaps, which equals out to just around 18 to 19% of his snaps resulting in a quarterback pressure. So that is something that he can hang his hat on. Kind of a big F you to the defensive coordinators or whoever made that call to not start him. He outdid his, let's see who started. So it looks like, I'm trying to see who started at defensive tackle over Malik Jackson, or they have him as a left end, which is weird because he's a defensive tackle. But nonetheless, it looks like they ran Campbell, Jackson, Avery Jones, and Marcel Darius. So it looks like Avery Jones started over Malik Jackson, which is kind of weird. But
it was odd. Dewane Smoot was on the field for meaningful snaps.
Yeah, the very first defensive drive of the game, I think the very first line they sent out there was Taven on the outside, Smoot on the other, and then on the inside it was like Avery and Darius. It was a really weird defensive line. I don't think I've seen that combination this year, at least not to start the game. So that was very interesting. But yeah, Malik Jackson led the team in pressures. So anybody that was kind of talking smack at Malik Jackson, you can go sit in your corner. And then also tipping our hats off to the king, Jalen Ramsey, posting a 90.4 defensive rating with a 90.1 in coverage yesterday. It has him down for 158 allowed yards on the day, but I think they might be crediting him with that long AB touchdown, which just isn't his fault. So maybe that'll be adjusted, but he still, even with those numbers, still had a 90.1 coverage or a 91.1 coverage grade. So if they do rule him at fault, that's kind of BS. That should go on to Sean Gibson, who should have, let's see, they say Sean Gibson only let up 11 yards in the day, which isn't true.
Yeah, they're definitely listening to.
So subtract 80 yards from, or 84 yards from Jalen Ramsey. So whatever 158 minus 84 is, and add that to Sean Gibson and let down a thing. And you probably bump Jalen Ramsey's coverage grade up to like a 93 or 94 with that. 78 yards. So it's counting the 78 yard touchdown to Antonio Brown. And is saying he let up the touchdown. So really, subtract the touchdown, subtract that 78 yards, and you have a damn good day from Jalen Ramsey, who really just gave his best effort on that broken play to try to save the day. But nonetheless, Antonio Brown's a very fast and skilled receiver. There was no stopping that once the ball was in the air. So have yourself a day for Jalen Ramsey. I don't even know if the NFL gave him one yesterday. That's kind of BS. But
I know PFF put him on their like PFF team of the week or like players of the week team or something like that.
Well, at least he's getting some credit there. But yes, King, have yourself a day. This is a pro Jalen Ramsey podcast.
All I want to say is that I've literally had people in my mentions the past 24 hours blaming the defense for the loss. They did, because they said that the points at the end were on the defense and decided that context is irrelevant in the year 2018 because they want to defend Bortles. So isn't it odd that, and I would consider, I know people like to say that we're Bortles haters. In the reality of things, we're just objective.
We're not Bortles truthists.
We're not being fans here. We're being objective and telling you as it is by objective observations and real legitimate statistical analytical analysis that he is bad. So isn't it funny that a relatively objective show using these numbers could only praise the defense that people keep deciding that is at fault and have a bunch of proof that proves that the one thing everyone says like is absolutely untouchable, you can't blame, really is at fault?
Yeah, I mean, these Bortles truthers, man. I got unblocked on Jags Facebook this weekend right after the game, so I was able to see what the aftermath was. And the amount of people that were blaming the defense because they're like, they blew a 16-point lead. It's like, well, maybe if your offense could just get like 3 first downs, you know, in the second half, whatever, no big deal. That probably can ice the game. So it's infuriating. that people are painting this on the defense, and then the Jacks come out today and say Blake Bortles is still the starter going into next week. I would not expect if there are boycotts of some sort, either from the fan base or from the defense, because I can tell you what, the longer Blake is starting, this is going to get uglier and uglier, and the rift is going to get much bigger in this locker room.
Yeah, no, for sure. I completely agree with you. And I think that should just about do it for our episode today of Locked On Jaguars. Like I said at the start of the show, make sure to go ahead and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Megaphone. Anywhere you can listen to podcasts, you can listen to Locked On Jaguars. We'll catch up with you guys later this week. Crossover episode coming with our buddy Kevin Massera of Locked On Bills. I'll figure out a time for that. That should be up on Wednesday, and we'll catch up with you guys then.